Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your I fought the feeling and I won of music news and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica. Good times. Personally, maybe I'm a experimental troll. I'm a Latin freestyle troll. If you heard what we came in with, which is trolls want to have good times, you know what I'm talking about. That's from the Trolls World Tour soundtrack. That movie came out a few days ago. It is bizarre. It's bizarre for a bunch of reasons. It's a children's movie that seems to be about rock critic debates, which is a very unusual format for a children's movie, or frankly, for any movie. I wrote about Trolls World Tour, but it got me thinking about all of my colleagues, right, who are quarantined, they're at home, they are locked in with their families. And I was like, surely some of these colleagues, they've got kids. What are their kids listening to? What do their kids make them listen to? What are their kids like that drives them nuts? Children, they are more than just a backdrop for your Zoom conversation. They are actual living beings. They have tastes of their own. And on this week's episode of Popcast, I am going to talk to the daddies of the New York Times culture department. Also, daddies. I'm going to talk to Gilbert Cruz. I'm going to talk to Dave Itzkoff. I'm going to talk to Dave Renard. I'm going to talk to Jeremy Egner. We are going to talk about what is going on in their houses right now, what their children are into, how do their kids learn about music, what do their kids play that they love, what do their kids make them play that drives them nuts. Up first, the daddy of daddies, coming strong. It's Gilbert Cruz. Gilbert runs the culture department at the New York Times. First time on Popcast. Gilbert, what's the energy? What's going on at home, man? How you feeling?
At this moment, I'm wondering why this is my first time on the podcast.
Yeah, that's, first of all, you are in a rare group of people who are allowed to drag me on Popcast. You're in the camp. So by all means, go for it. Tell me honored. You're mad. Tell me you're upset. Honored, but also frustrated.
I listen to it every week. I've been waiting. That. I've had this job for 2.5 years almost. First invite. So
here's the thing. I don't want to overuse you. I don't want to put you in a position where you're feeling like we're relying on you. I don't want you to feel like I'm taking advantage of my access to your celebrity. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want you to feel like, oh, there go John. You know, he's just trying to like use me to bump up Popcast numbers. Like that's crazy. I wouldn't want to put you in that position.
It's a terrible save, but I'll give you points for trying, John.
I appreciate it. See, the thing is, I'm anticipating the frustration that would make you feel. And I don't even want to put you through it. So I'm just cutting you off at the pass. Simple.
You know what? This is why I love you. This is why people love you.
One of several reasons, TBQH. But anyway, Gilbert, you're a parent, right?
I am.
You're here, not just of me and the rest of the staff, but also who's in your home. Talk to me about what your home structure's like. You don't have to give your address, just FYI, if you don't want to.
I won't.
Okay.
I have a wife and we have a 5-year-old boy and we live in New Jersey, which is where we moved a little more than a year ago.
New York Times editors moving to New Jersey. Big vibes.
I have lived in New York City my entire life. I've lived in every borough.
Wow.
And I'm in New Jersey now. That's true. I lived in Staten Island.
Wow. That's big.
That's the question everyone has. Even Gilbert, Staten Island?
Wait, Gilbert, here we are. We're two New Yorkers, right? It's Thursday. I just dropped this piece about New York accents. Here we are, two New Yorkers that kind of don't have a really thorough New York accent. What's that about?
Hey, make it three. Make it three. I don't have an accent either.
Yo, Pedro, you definitely got an accent. What the hell are you talking about?
Get out of here with that. Get out of here. And I've lived in every single borough, too. So respect, Gilbert.
Hey. Wow. All right. I'm not the only one.
A bunch of borough dilettantes is what I'm hearing. I, as someone who's committed to Brooklyn, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess y'all just feeling really mobile out here.
This is the situation. Whenever I get around my family, I speak a little bit differently than I do when I'm at work or when I, you know, the years I was in college, it is one of those, you know, you affect a different way of speaking when you're around different sorts of people. But when I get back with my family, when I get back with my stepmother, who is Italian from Bay Ridge, I speak a very different way.
Given that you have all this square footage, I imagine it's magisterial. Given that, how proximate are you to your child's music?
So my 5-year-old son has a wonderful relationship to music. There are two primary vectors, possibly three. One is when we're driving around, which we're not doing as much these days, but we're driving around and we have on the radio, we have on our iPhone, Sirius XM, whatever. He'll hear a song and he'll ask us to add it to his playlist. We've made a Spotify playlist.
Oh.
It's the most random playlist that you could possibly find. He watches movies and he hears songs in those movies and he wants to hear them over and over again. And then because we're a bunch of Brooklyn jerks, we have a lot of used vinyl and he likes to put records on. It's something physical for him to do. And so we have started to buy him his own records for things that we think that he might like. It allows him to put the record on, listen to one side, walk over and flip it. And it sort of gives him something to do with his hands in a way that he'd never be able to do if it was just on our Sonos speakers.
And the vinyl, he's at a point where he like can identify the record by the cover art. Like he can kind of like pull his own records at this point.
We put all his records into a little section, right? So what he listens to there is there are a couple of the, you know, Frozen 1 and Frozen 2 soundtracks. He started to get into some Broadway cast recordings, which is unexpected but delightful. He was really into Little Shop of Horrors about 3 weeks ago.
Well, that's time. That's a banger. It's just going to be a banger.
He's been listening a lot to Hamilton, and he has started to memorize some of the songs, which is both wonderful and disconcerting because he says the word whore fairly frequently because that's one of the first words in Hamilton. He has no idea what it means.
But can he spit? How are his bars? His bars are strong?
There are a couple sections when he can approximate speed in terms of lyrical delivery. And then there are parts when Lafayette gets on where he's like, he's talking too fast, Daddy. I can't do it.
Peace to David Diggs, the OG Lafayette. Tell me about this playlist, man. Because actually, this is something you and I didn't have access to as kids, right? Like, we would hear something in the car and we had no, I mean, you couldn't duplicate. I mean, you didn't even know if your parents would know what it was, no less have access to it and be able to immediately duplicate it to you. What kinds of stuff does he gravitate to? Give me a little vibe of what's on the playlist.
It's absolutely random. This is the playlist. This is what he has, just some of the songs. He has Free Falling by Tom Petty.
Okay.
He has Moving Out by Billy Joel. He has Immortals by Fall Out Boy. He has The Middle by Maren Morris. He has Post Malone Sunflower, which he got onto when he saw it in the Spider-Man movie. He has a couple of Vampire Weekend songs. He has a Psychedelic Fur song, Girl on Fire by Alicia Keys. I mean, it's all over the place. You know, three songs from the Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas soundtrack. He wants it all in the same place so that when we're driving around in the car or, you know, we're downstairs making Legos, he'll say, Daddy, put on my playlist and I'll have to hear Queen's We Will Rock You, you know, for the 30th time that week.
So does he requests the playlist broadly speaking, or is he requesting individual songs?
He wants to know that these songs he picked and he can control. It's like when I used to go to bars when I was in my early 20s, I would go, there'd be a jukebox. I'd be like, I'm going to put $20 in that jukebox because I want to control this thing for the next hour and a half.
For the record, you are that guy. There's just always that guy. You're that guy.
I'm 1,000,000% that guy.
Oh my God.
I would think this is why I ended up with the job that I have, because I think that my taste is better than the taste of other people at the bar. I'm wrong and I'm a jerk.
Well, okay. But to be fair, I think the reason I ended up with the job that I ended up with is because I am not the person that puts all the quarters in the bar jukebox. I'm the person that makes fun of the choices of the person who did that.
This explains our relationship.
It really, no, this is great. I just feel like this is a super revealing conversation. This is really telling us a lot.
My son has become that all of a sudden.
Now, if you're in control in the car.
Yeah.
What are you playing? You're playing radio. You're playing satellite radio. You're playing your own Spotify situation. Like, what's your input that then he is kind of gathering from?
So until late last year, we had a real old car. You know, it was like a 2003 Hyundai Elantra. You know, it didn't have satellite radio. It had radio.
Yeah.
Right. So we listened to 106.7, 103.5, Z100, 101.1, classics, whatever, you know. And so he would hear stuff on there. Now that we have satellite radio, which makes me feel as daddiest as I've ever felt.
That's a real thing. Yeah.
He's all over the place. You know, there's like five stations that are pure country. There are five stations that are pure metal. There are five stations that are, you know, 80s new wave. And we, you know, my wife and I cycle between all of those things because we like to think that we have broad musical taste and he picks up on stuff.
It's interesting that the satellite radio versus radio distinction is actually really interesting. I also drive an old car, and so I don't have satellite radio. I have regular radio. And my conception of radio is so regional. You know what I mean? It's so local. It's so New York specific. It's I-97. It's Power 105. It's La Mega. It's KTU. It's Z100. You know, it's like that's my brain space for radio. And every now and again, when I travel for work, which was a thing that happened in other years, when I traveled for work, you know, you get a rental car. Sometimes it'll have satellite radio on it. Immediately, like the minute I turn on, you know, like 90s on 9 or, you know, like Country XL or something like that, I immediately become a 57-year-old guy who plays golf. It's really strange. I don't know how that happens so fast. But there is something about the kind of the slickness of the satellite radio presentation that immediately kind of ages you. It's weird. It totally takes me out of myself.
I think there are a couple of other things too, right? So I first got introduced to Sirius in the same way. I'd rent a nicer car than anything I ever had at home. I'm like, well, I'll pay $3 extra for the Sirius. And so it's either that or I got a new car and now this thing comes with it, right? So there's something sort of socioeconomic about those two things. There's also the how niche each of those stations are that allows you to lean into what you may think are your best impulses, what might actually be your worst impulses. You know, I just want to listen to 90s on 9. And so I'll hear every Hootie, Counting Crows, Goo Goo Dolls song, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Big records, all of those big records, big, big records.
I heard 2 weeks ago a Hootie and the Blowfish song, and I thought of you.
I appreciate that. I want everybody, like, you know how sometimes when somebody is having a bad day on Twitter, someone else will be like, hey, everybody say something nice to so-and-so, you know, just to cheer him here. I would love it if everybody on Twitter would say, hey, I heard a Hootie song and I thought of you. Not because I'm having a bad day. I mean, no worse than all the rest of us in America and on the planet. But that's just like a thing I would like people to say or think. So I'm just throwing that out there. Anybody wants to tweet that, like, by all means, go ahead.
Let her cry, also, John. Let her cry.
I always do, TBQH. Also, I sent Karen a note the other day. I got a press release for Hootie covering REM's Losing My Religion. It was like maybe like an Amazon original or something, you know, like one of those like weird streaming services. Mm-hmm. And I forwarded her the email and I was like, this is the theme song to our buddy comedy. Like when we,
it's where the two theme of you meet.
It really is. It's like dead center. Do you find, now obviously you're still in the random part of your son's musical education. Are there things, are there through lines? Are you noticing trends or directions that he's going in or surprises? Is he taking you places that you weren't necessarily anticipating?
We haven't even talked really about his sort of obsession with the Disney soundtracks, you know, the Frozen, the Frozen 2, stuff like that. Yeah. It seems like he likes, which is not surprising given who his parents are, you know, really sort of melodic, big music with melody. You know, he likes to try to put his voice high, even though he can't do it. And he will put on the Frozen 2 soundtrack and he will get in the middle of the room and he will sing Into the Unknown and he'll throw his arms up. And I don't know if That's just a thing that five-year-olds just love to act stuff out. But he loves it, and he plays it incessantly.
So have y'all watched the Trolls movies?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you know I wrote about the Trolls World Tour.
I sure do.
This week.
I sure do.
A bizarre film. Very strange film. I didn't look and see who the writer of that film was. I feel like it was someone we have worked with in the last 15 years. Someone we know from the blog trenches.
We definitely paid $20 to watch Trolls World Tour last Friday night. Friday night is movie night, so that's what we watched. Okay. And we said, this is $20. You get it for 24 hours. We have to watch this twice. And we did not. And I feel like I got cheated. But we watched it the one time. And it was fine. I mean, you know, it was completely, from a musical perspective, sort of indecipherable. And you nodded at this too. Like, where's hip hop world? You know, where's like the most popular musical form in the entire world is not represented. I'm a little insulted as a Puerto Rican that like the reggaeton guys and the K-pop people were sort of like weird assassins that couldn't even get their own land. It felt a little insulting to me. I did not transfer any of this stress to my child. He enjoyed it just as a movie. I liked the little worm guy that the James Corden character, you know, Mr. Dinkles or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
He's my favorite character, but it's a bizarre movie. Absolutely. Kids barely understand genre. It's just a weird conceit.
But here's a question. As you know, I don't have children. I am my own child, as you know. So here's a question that you as a parent will be able to shed some light on for me as a non-parent. So I watched both the original Trolls and Trolls World Tour, because I obviously had not seen original Trolls, because why would I have seen original Trolls, right? So I watched both of these movies in the last few days. And I gotta be honest, I'm pretty like starry-eyed at the visual quality and the kind of imagination and the, you know, the character shape. Like a lot of the things that maybe are a little bit dull around the edges to you who's watched a lot of kids' movies, to me, are pretty striking. So at what point in the arc of parenting do those things lose their luster and you're kind of like, let's get it over with. Come on, let's get to the end. When does that happen?
I mean, the wonderful thing, I'm just going to be real honest with you right now. The wonderful thing about this moment is, or really streaming any kids' movies at home, is like, I check out very easily and I'll take my phone out and I'll flip through Twitter and my child will be next to me and he will not even notice, right? So
right.
Trolls World Tour, there's some funny parts. I was somewhat engaged, but I've seen some really terrible kids' movies at home and my kid will be totally locked in and I will, you know, have my phone down next to my leg, trying not to show him that I'm completely unengaged. You know, but I took my child to see Frozen 2 in the theater twice, and a weird thing happened with that movie. Same thing happened with the first Frozen, where I walked out of the movie, and I was like, those songs were no good. I have no idea what people are talking about. Like, those are completely unmemorable songs. I was very disappointed. People were talking out of their butts, like, these songs are trash.
Yeah.
And then your child plays all of those songs dozens and dozens of times. And either those songs were good and I didn't realize it, or I convinced myself that they are good because I'm listening to them over and over and over again.
Yeah, either your emotional defenses break down or you activate the part of your brain that you had chosen not to have active the first go around, and then you access whatever it is there is to access.
Absolutely.
Bob Christgau, I can't remember in what context he told this story, but he said something very similar about Backstreet Boys, I Want It That Way. It might have been something that he wrote, maybe in one of the consumer guides. I can't quite remember, but he was basically like, I ignored this. I was like mindful that this was a thing, but fundamentally I ignored it. And then my daughter just played it over and over, like to the point where like I had no choice but to apply like my normal level of critical engagement. And what I've realized is, in essence, this is a genius song. So maybe to go out, maybe what we should do is you should tell me which song from the Frozen ecosystem has revealed itself to you as brilliant.
I would have to go with Into the Unknown, which is on the Frozen 2 soundtrack.
Which is still in the Billboard Top 20.
Do not play the Panic at the Disco version. For all the great things I said about how the soundtrack has grown on me, that song remains, to quote you, Garbaggio.
Garbaggio, man. Yeah, first of all, Panic in the Disco, extremely trash. Sorry, apologies to Karen, who's going to hear this and just be really upset, but that's just not a good band. So there's two versions is what you're saying.
There's the one that is sung in, you know, diegetically within the movie, and then the Panic at the Disco version runs over the end credits. And it's, you know, you have to run out of the room as fast as you can so you don't actually hear it.
All right, we are off that. We are diegesis only on Popcast. Everything, first of all, everything is diegesis as far as I'm concerned. But we are going to be straight diegetic up in here. Gilbert, I appreciate you calling in for the first, and depending how this went, possibly the last time. You know, it's tough to say. It's really on you, I guess. But either way, you know, whatever your comfort levels are, you're welcome anytime.
This was a delight. Thank you.
Every day it's a little harder as I feel my power grow. Don't you know there's part of me that loves to go into the unknown, into the unknown, into the unknown.
Up now, Jeremy Egner is here. Jeremy, what's good, man?
Good to be back, man. Producer Emeritus, I think, is my official title with the podcast.
Hey, an OG. You were Popcast when Popcast was not cool.
Yep, I remember those days.
No shots at that generation. No shots, but it's a long time. Jeremy runs our television coverage now. Also, first of all, Jeremy is recovered from the coronavirus. He wrote a very moving piece about it in the paper. Let me say on my behalf, on the behalf of our department, how grateful we are and how glad we are that you're well and up and running, although you're really back to work way too soon, TBH.
Yeah, no, I think I may have jumped the gun on that, but it's amazing how old staring at the same four walls will get. So, you know, I was willing to come back to work if it meant, you know, breaking up the quarantine monotony.
Well, we are here to break up what you have broken up the monotony.
Let's just break stuff, John.
We're re-breaking. Jeremy, you're at home. Tell me about your family setup. I know you have a young one. Talk me through this.
I have, a 9-year-old daughter. And, you know, we have had first of all, thanks very much. I appreciate the kind thoughts. It's good to be vertical again.
True.
You know, yeah. So we've been in a little bit of a specific situation just because we've all been, you know, separated, you know, mm-hmm. But my daughter's quarantine viewing of choice has been Glee. And so she's been plowing through that show for the past, you know, however long it's been.
Was she always into Glee, or is it kind of something she just arrived at?
Yeah, she just arrived at it, much to my chagrin. I mean, look,
says the television editor of the New York Times.
Right. I mean, you know, TV is, you know, putting bread on the table. So I'm happy for that. But at the same time, you know, different choices wouldn't have been a terrible thing. Given this is an audio discussion, that's not audio that you really want, you know, 100 hours in a row of in your life.
No. Do you remember? What was the collective delusion that was happening during that like 18-month period where people were like, Glee is great? What was going on then? What was that about?
I think part of it was just the fascination with musicals because it was still kind of on the leading edge of that resurgence, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, just the novelty around a musical television show still felt very fresh in a kind of throwback sort of way. And again, I have sort of recently seen the first season again, as it happens. And the first season is pretty charming. The actors are charming. The performances aren't, you know, bad per se, but it gets pretty dire pretty quickly. And so we're deep into like 5 or 6 at this point. And
No,
it feels, it's pretty desperate. It's desperate times here in Shea Egner.
Tell me about your daughter's typical music inclinations. Like, what kind of stuff is she into? Does she discover it on her own? Are you putting her on to stuff? Or is your wife putting her on to stuff? Like, how's the music language in your house get disseminated?
Friends are still, you know, per usual, the most typical gateway. She's pretty straight down the middle, as far as I can tell. I'm a little out of the loop of the, you know, the 9-year-old music scene, but Taylor Swift, Katy Perry. I don't know where they stand in the sort of the pop galaxy at this point, but she's still into them. And then, you know, every once in a while, there'll be something like Bikini Kill that I think is probably more to do with her mom than anything else. But
wait, was mom a riot girl, like, in the scene?
She was kind of a closet riot girl. I mean, you know, if you look back at the photos, it's all, you know, sweaters, maybe some Doc Martens under the sort of baggy jeans. But
yeah,
she was into the music. She just wasn't living the lifestyle, I think, was kind of
accurate.
But, you know, it's making my life better. I would much rather hear that coming out of the Amazon machine.
Is that how you guys hear music? Like, you have the Echo or whatever it is? What's the in-house distribution channel for the stuff?
I mean, I have a pretty nice Klipsch Bluetooth thing for, like, the living room. But at some point, it felt like when the Echoes first came out, they were just sending them with every delivery you got from Amazon. So somehow we ended up with, like, 11 Echoes. And, you know, so my daughter inherited one of those. And so that's kind of her main vehicle.
And so she has her own personal one. She's not necessarily dominating the thing that's for the whole house. She has her own thing.
The thing that's interesting to me is somebody who grew up in, you know, middle America. I grew up in Texas, you know, spending a lot of times in cars, you know, is how little the radio means to her, right? Because, you know, it's just not something that is in her life, you know, because we're not driving very often. All of the music that she knows about, she is sort of getting through alternative channels, whether that's movies or the occasional video game or friends or television shows or whatever. So that's kind of an interesting thing from somebody who's, like, kind of grew up doing the radio thing.
Do you get a sense that she understands her identity, her personal identity, at all through her musical choices? Obviously, we're talking a wide gap between listening to a Glee or a Taylor Swift or a Bikini Kill. Is she far enough down the road to understand that there is a link between what you choose to listen to and how you choose to present to the world? Is she onto that yet?
I don't think so. I don't think we're there yet. It just seems to be things that she just, you know, it's all filed under the same folder of I like this. You know, it's like next to gummy bears and quesadillas and her pony's shirt. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't think it's really made the sort of identity link yet, but I assume that's coming.
Sure. Have you taken her to any shows? Like, do you guys, have you gone to concerts at all back when that was a thing we were allowed to do?
Yeah, well, I don't actually remember if I've ever been to a concert at this point.
Yeah,
but I've not done this sort of chaperone thing where it's like me sort of leaning against the wall. It's at Madison Square Garden for something.
You told me earlier that she plays, was it violin?
Yeah. So there's been a lot of that happening. So it's like, you know, it's been a steady diet of, like, Matthew Morrison hip hop covers and then Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on the back of that.
I just literally shivered when you said those words. I, like, literally, like, physically, no, I physically felt ill momentarily when you said that.
Yeah, you would take that harder than most people, I think.
I would. It's absolutely right. So is she an enthusiastic student, like, from a violin perspective? Is she really into it? Or are you guys kind of like, you're going to learn violin, damn it?
Right. It's her thing, you know, right now. It's again, it's not an identity thing. She also goes to, like, her main school is a ballet school, you know? So she's sort of, like, living that right now. And there's just lots of ballet and you know, adjacent activities. But again, it's not like I'm going to be, you know, a principal at City Ballet. It's kind of like, oh, I like this, so let's do this for a while until something else comes up. You know, kids kind of just do that or seem to do that for some stretch and or for the rest of their lives, based on some of my friends.
As I noted at the beginning of the episode, I obviously have to qualify all of these conversations by saying I do not have any children. Sure. They remain mysteries to me. So everything you're saying to me is novel and mind-blowing, just for the record. Also, it's interesting when you say she's not quite at the point where she's understanding these divisions or these kind of, like, false categories that we end up putting on stuff, because for her, all of those things can live in the same universe. A Bikini Kill, a classical music practice session, a Taylor Swift song, that's all one universe. And you and I, as older folks, understand that it is, in fact, all one universe. We just categorize it because it's easier to talk about that way. But she's kind of in the pre-version of that. We're on the post side. She's in the pre-side.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. You start your life thinking of everything as kind of all part of the same ball, and then you have to spend 10 to 20 years slicing everything up as thinly as possible, where sure you realize that is just kind of a waste of time. And then you're back to where you were when you were eight.
Absolutely. Yes, I've made a whole career off it. It's been great. Thanks for noticing. I appreciate it. As we go out, I want to play a song that is representative of your daughter's musical taste. And I don't want you to sugarcoat it. So which means if we have to play a record from Glee, we're going to do it. So
I don't think we can subject the people to that.
Nah, you know what? People come to Popcast. They know every now and again, it's going to go dark. They know. They're at peace with it. They understand. So is there a particular Glee song that has gotten under your skin or that has made her very happy, either or both of those things?
I will say the thing that has been haunting my dreams, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, was Matthew Morrison's cover of Gold Digger.
I am.
So did I just break you?
I actually developed beads of sweat just in an immediate response. I actually have to take off my outer shirt, my overshirt, because I'm just hot right now, like not in the good way. Yeah. All right. So to go out, we are going to gift our listeners with Matthew Morrison covering Gold Digger by Kanye West.
I'm so sorry, everybody.
On the televisual experience that is Glee. Jeremy, thank you. This is a terrible thing you've done. Right. I am grateful that you are here to do it to us.
Thanks very much, and I sincerely apologize.
Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no bro. Now I ain't saying she a gold digger, but she ain't messing with no bro. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead, get down. Get down, girl, go ahead.
Coming up now, our next daddy on the Daddies episode of Popcast. It's Dave Renard. Dave, you have a robust sounding title. You're the senior editor for planning in the culture department. Dave, that basically means everything we put out's got to run through you, correct?
Something like that, yeah. I'm directing traffic.
I mean, it's a lot of traffic, though. Let's not sell it short. It's a lot of traffic. But another thing I know about you, because you second read a lot of my pieces, is I know that you care a lot about music, personally, right?
That is true. Yep.
Before we get into what's happening in your household, you want to tell us a little bit about where your predilections lie?
I was a college radio DJ, I guess is the best way to explain it.
Shout out your radio station.
KCOU 88.1 FM, Columbia, Missouri.
And me, JD, the best kept secret, WHRB 95.3, Rhythm 95. Let's go.
Very nice. So yeah, I don't know. I guess I've just always followed music a lot, kept up with it.
Since you care about it, tell me what's happening in your house. First of all, what's the structure of your house? Who's in the house?
Who's in the house? My wife, Shannon, who also works at the New York Times, is in our house. And our daughter, Alex, who is 9, about to turn 10, and is in 4th grade, is in our house.
How much are Alex's tastes determined by your tastes?
I would say that before it was most, you know, like the structure was more like, oh, we would play stuff that we like, and she would latch on and say, I like that, I like that, I don't like that. It is pretty heavily driven by Spotify, I would say.
Okay.
She had a playlist and would say, throw that on my playlist. And sometimes very weird things that I would play would go on the playlist.
So she has a specific playlist. We talked to Gilbert earlier. Gilbert, same thing, specific playlist. As a childless person, I was not anticipating any of this technological innovation.
So I guess then the more recent innovation is that she has her own, like we have a Spotify family plan, and now she has her kind of a whole own thing. But that's pretty recent. She had been using a Chromebook for school, and so we actually got her one of those for Christmas, a kind of cheap, you know, inexpensive laptop that at the time I thought was maybe a little overboard, and now has turned out to be a completely essential piece of distance learning technology for 2020 times.
Right. This is not Spawn. This is not an ad. This is just a concerned father talking about the technology that's helping him get through a challenging period in time, right?
Exactly. I mean, you need something. So yeah. So now she kind of has her own Spotify deal on there and puts her own songs on, which I think more and more is driven by things that she hears on the radio, although that is a little bit frozen too, since we're not driving around quite as much.
Yeah. So you snoop in. So you sort of like peep in on what she's listening to, what she arrives at on her own, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And which, you know, I think more and more is trending towards pop stuff that her and her friends like. Ed Sheeran, she likes, Shawn Mendes, among some of the ones that personally I'm less into, but that she's down with. Or then things that we kind of both like. Kacey Musgraves is a big one that kind of like the whole household is into. Taylor Swift, we all pretty much like.
When you say she's arriving at it via friends, like, do you have a sense of kind of like what the musical discourse among 9-year-olds is like right now? Like, how does stuff traffic amongst them?
One place that she would hear a lot of stuff was at after school. That, like a lot of things, is a little bit on pause. When we were in Brooklyn, we, you know, recently moved to New Jersey, but when we were in Brooklyn, I think she would hear a lot of pop radio and
I thought you were gonna say Pop Smoke.
No. No. Not like Pop comes, Smoke.
She but, comes bursting into the room like, "Welcome to the party." And you're like, "What is happening here?"
No. But pop radio and rap radio stuff that the camp counselors and after school counselors would play.
Okay, so it was kind of the after school where stuff got disseminated. Now, how proactive is she? Like, is she actively seeking stuff out, or is she just kind of responding to what she's hearing or what's being presented to her?
No, I was kind of talking to her about that this morning. I think that she's not really like actively seeking out stuff. It's more like what things go in front of her, and the reaction part is like, I like that. I want that on my playlist. But she's not really like hunting Spotify or hunting, you know, this or that place to find new stuff on her own, is my sense.
She's 9. She's about to be 10. You're on the cusp, I would imagine, of her kind of getting out of the ecosystem where she's just accepting Taylor. It's Disney stuff. It's what, you know, it's movie stuff, and starting to make that turn. Does it cause you any agony or agita to feel like, oh, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, I'm not going to know what she's into? Like, she's going to start moving in directions that are going to be somehow illegible to me. Is that on your mind at all as a parent?
Maybe. By illegible, you mean like music that I don't understand or like, or?
Yeah, like either that it's music that you don't understand because it doesn't kind of comport with like the aesthetic system that you're used to, or possibly it's music that you think is not, it's not appropriate, you know, if it's going to go down that direction. Like, is that something that you think?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, to get ready for this, I was kind of like looking over what was on her playlist, and I saw Blinding Lights by The Weeknd, and I was like,
hey,
oh, there's no curses in that song. You know, it's on the radio. I guess I could say on the family side of Spotify, all the songs with explicit content can be kind of like grayed out. And I think that's the only song on The Weeknd record that is available for her to play.
Is that true? That's a very robust little tidbit of knowledge that
there might be two tracks, but yeah.
I never really thought about that. And it's interesting because The Weeknd is like a classic example of an artist who you and I know it's really raunchy, right? Like, we know it's bad, but the way that he presents and the shimmeriness of the music, the way it gleams, is in such stark opposition to what we know is like the real greasy underbelly. So it is music that can function on both levels. It can function as not children's music, but music that children can access, but also for older folks, we're like, oh, we really know what's going on here. That's interesting. And I hadn't really thought about that. Although I guess I did come up a little bit in The Weeknd review, because like there's the whole thing with the Blinding Lights meme on TikTok, and it's all like very family friendly videos. And I'm like, of course it's family friendly, because it all stops, all the audio stops before he starts singing about all the raunchy stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Is your daughter on TikTok? Like, is that major for her or no?
She's not really like on social. She knows about TikTok and stuff like that. But no, she doesn't have accounts.
What else is on the list besides The Weeknd?
She definitely likes Billie Eilish, which she kind of resisted for a bit because her older cousin is like super, super into Billie. And she was kind of like, I don't know, you know.
How old is that older cousin?
I believe she is 14.
Okay, so that's like right in the Billy sweet spot right there.
And I think one of the other factors in her liking it was we got Just Dance on the Nintendo Switch, which is another self-isolation biggie in our household, playing more Nintendo, and Bad Guys on there. So she like got more into that from that. And there is kind of like a wide range of music on there that probably we otherwise wouldn't have heard in our house that now are like songs we all know.
Yeah, like what's on Just Dance on a Nintendo Switch? That's like a completely foreign ecosystem to me. Like what happens on there? What do they play?
Well, so, you know, there's these like coordinated dances that you try to match as well as you can. And it's to a lot of recent pop songs. So some of the ones that her and her friends have done the most is like Bad Guy, I Like It Like That by Cardi, which, you know, I knew that one before. Old Town Road Remix is a biggie. But then there are some other ones like Kill This Love by Blackpink is on there. I'm not a big K-pop guy, but now that is kind of like a heavy rotation song in our house because of Just Dance.
That's wild. Yo, Blackpink is dope. I've never been to a K-pop concert where the looks on the faces of the performers was more like being at like a sad indie rock concert in the early 90s, you know, or in the 90s sometime, you know what I mean? Like where people on stage look like reluctant to be there or kind of like somehow like it's like sallow, the whole mood. That's what Blackpink look like. They look like they'd been kidnapped, but but I do love the music. So that's wild. Blackpink on the Just Dance on the Nintendo Switch.
There's also some Skrillex song, Bangarangs, on there.
Oh yeah,
I wouldn't listen to that song, but on Just Dance, it kind of hits, you know.
Do you think that your daughter is going to end up having like maybe more polyglot musical tastes than you or people of our generation were growing up with because of the immediate access to all this different kind of stuff?
I would think so, because when she hears songs from me, you know, you can just add them to a playlist right away. And some of these songs, if I don't say like, oh, that's from the 60s or that was like a really big hit in the 80s or like that was from when I was in college, like it would almost not really be apparent. You know, another thing that has kind of interested me is the way that certain music heavy kids movies recently, like Sing or the Trolls movies, kind of like bring in songs that kids otherwise might not know. Like after the first Trolls movie, I realized that all of the younger kids now know Move Your Feet by Junior Senior, which was kind of funny. You know, I'm Still Standing from Sing and things like that, where I'm like, oh, where do they all know this from?
I mean, am I wrong in thinking that children's movies from our generation did not do that? Am I wrong in thinking that? Because I don't feel like
you're right.
But I also don't remember anything. I don't remember anything that happened before like 3 weeks ago. So I, you know, it's tough to say.
I feel like the pop music heavy kids movie is kind of a new thing. I mean, obviously in the Disney movies, there were a lot of original songs and that is still going on too. But I feel like having like a heavy pop music playlist be a big part of a kids movie is relatively recent development, I guess.
I think that's probably right. It's like kind of like the arrival of the jukebox musical on Broadway. It's sort of, there's something similar happening.
No, that's true. And Sing is kind of like that, where it's a vehicle to bring in all of these songs that people already know in this kind of jukebox format where it's cartoon animals singing it.
Okay, so let's go out on a song that you had been unexpectedly exposed to by your daughter's taste, but that you now actually like.
Let's say Blackpink. Yeah, I think Kill This Love, I probably wouldn't have checked that otherwise.
Here's Blackpink. Let's take it to Lisa. Let's take it to Jenny, Rosé, Jisoo. It's Kill This Love. Dave, appreciate you.
Thanks so much, John.
We are back, coming at you live and extremely intense with Dave Itzkoff. Dave, what's going on, man?
I don't know if I can deliver that kind of intensity. I'm definitely The live part I can live up to.
Dave, we go back. Let's just keep it a buck. We go back, right? I know if anybody can bring the intensity. I know you can.
But that was before I had kids, you know. Now I'm mellow.
Ooh, oh. Well, as a recurring theme of this episode, it turns out, is the blindness caused to me by my childlessness in terms of this particular subject matter. So I am turning to the daddies of the section for some wisdom and some guidance and some awareness. Okay. So anyway, Dave is a culture reporter. Dave has written a gang of books. You know Dave Itzkoff. Dave and I go back more than a decade.
That is true.
We're very much generational peers.
Yes.
And here we have landed side by side so that I can arrive at this moment to ask you about the children's music that's playing in your house. First of all, tell us what your home situation is. I know you're locked in. Who's all in the house? What's the setup?
It's my wife, Amy.
Shouts to Amy. Yo, shouts to Amy.
Thank you. I will pass your shouts along with gratitude. So she and I, you know, we're together and we have a 5-year-old son named Max.
Max. Like, what's Max doing during the day? Like, while you're at the computer, grinding, crunching journalism, working the phones, where's Max at?
So, you know, Amy and I are, you know, tag teaming our responsibilities with Max. He gets a little bit every day still from his school. They'll put some assignments either on like a shared website that all the kids in his class have access to. They'll do a little bit of like live Zoom video, either in like small groups, or they'll have the whole, all 20 of them in a Zoom session together.
Okay.
Believe me, the pre-kindergartners, they are fierce. If your Wi-Fi is not up to snuff, they will let you know about it. They do not hold back. Oh my gosh.
Damn. Your Wi-Fi, your Fios is trash, son.
Yeah. pretty much. So that only, you know, that only accounts for a part of his day. And then the rest of the day, you know, Amy and I work together to kind of coordinate, okay, who is going to be working on what things at what times of day. And so, you know, if she's got something going, I'll have Max in increments, or if I'm doing something, she'll be handling him. And, you know, sometimes we take him out for a little bit, and sometimes we're just, you know, hanging in the house and we're playing. He gets a little bit of TV time, and sometimes it's structured play, and sometimes it's just daddy's gonna sit on your bed and look at his phone for a little bit,
right?
And
exactly. You that's a kind you of structured like. That's a kind yeah. of structured play.
At some point this will all just be a kind of hazy memory for him, and you know, we'll get a little extra bonding time, a little more face-to-face time with him, and then hopefully, you know, the worst of this will just kind of recede in his memory and we'll just be a little more tightly bound to him. That's all.
Now, you used to work at Spin, one in an earlier stage of your career.
That's right.
I know music is important to you. What's Max's relationship to music, and to what degree are you proactive in trying to shape it?
I would say when he was very little, I mean, we're talking maybe 1 to 2, that was when he was a little bit more either receptive to or interested in music that was really specifically made for children. So that's like the Sesame Street recordings, Elmo singing covers of popular songs, Blippi, who is a popular YouTube personality for kids, those sorts of things.
I'm not up on Blippi. Do I got to get up on Blippi?
A quick Google search will definitely bring you up to speed. It's better than Barney. I'll give you that much.
Okay. All right. Fair.
Not that those things don't still have like a certain place for him, but through the music that we listen to, and of course we try to calibrate what we play when we're around him, but he, you know, he's gotten turned on to things that, you know, are certainly, you know, we're not created for him, but which do have an appeal. Like a lot of kids, I mean, he certainly got into the Beatles, and we had about a period of a year where the only thing he ever wanted to watch on TV was the Yellow Submarine cartoon movie.
Oh, nice. And
yeah, he was just really into the visuals of it and the kind of the surrealness, but also he really liked the songs, and he kind of figured out which were the Ringo songs and which were the John Lennon songs or the George Harrison songs, and kind of figured out the Beatles each had their own little identity within the group, and that definitely appealed to him. He has this kind of like personal, like totally random playlist of things that he requests when we're in a car. And that can be anything from Custard Pie by Led Zeppelin. He really likes The One You Really Love by Magnetic Fields, that's a personal favorite. Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears, he really likes. And then a composition performed by Trombone Shorty called Ball and the Jack, he really likes. It's not like he is keyed into the particular artists or their histories or the personalities. It's just he heard the song and he thought it was really lively and he likes to hear it again.
Yeah, it's a mood. He identifies it with a positive feeling. Like music is still identified with kind of like a happy feeling for him.
Totally. And I think also just even having like a little bit of power to choose things, you know, it's not just that like mommy and daddy are like making you listen to what they want to hear. It's that like, oh, we can control what we hear in a car and here's what I would like to hear. And I get a vote in this process. And I think that's meaningful to him.
Part of the reason I wanted to do this episode was because I wrote about Trolls World Tour.
Yes.
I don't watch a lot of kids' movies. Like, and obviously every now and again, a children's movie will either tackle a theme that feels particularly relevant to adults, or will have a soundtrack that kind of like bursts into public consciousness, like with the Frozen soundtracks. Right. So just briefly kind of baptizing myself in this ecosystem really got me thinking about, you know, the music that I would listen to when I was young, when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, and I feel like right now, children's movies, and you're basically the same age as I am, so I'm curious what you think about this. I feel like children's movies are like much more preoccupied with and focused on and amplifying of pop music, quote unquote, than the children's movies of our generation.
I think that's fair. I mean, certainly there's much more of a dynamic now. And just a purely commercial one that these kinds of movies, whether they're good or bad, they can be a kind of platform to introduce kids to these artists to sell that music.
Cynicism. I love it.
These kids are going to, you know, if they're not already the consumers of these kinds of bands, you know, they're future consumers. And so that's a very simple, easy way to like get this stuff in front of them. And for those artists, it's like they need as wide a berth as possible to reach people. And, you know, radio is only fulfilling that up to a certain point. And this is a way to get to those kids.
Not to be overly cynical in keeping with what you were just talking about, but like kids influence each other. Like I'm sure there's like the most influential kid in the preschool class or in the first grade class who's like, I like this. And then everybody else is like, we're going to like this too, because this one kid said they like it. And now that's actually not an option. It's actually been sort of stratified in a way, or atomized, I should say. It's been atomized in a way where everybody kind of has to make these decisions on their own, or more on their own than they have in the past.
Yeah, it's, I think definitely among kids, it's as much about, like you say, either somebody is kind of like the alpha influencer and that, you know, rubs off on other kids, or just once they've heard enough other people talk about it, they start to get curious. Like my son, fortunately for me, I mean, Max was kind of an early adopter of Star Wars. And that's what a couple other kids in his class also happened to get into of their own volition. So now when they would come together in the mornings at drop off, they would all want to play Star Wars. And so if you're another boy in that class and you want to be part of their activity, not that they're exclusive of people, but if you know Star Wars or you learn Star Wars, you have another way into that group. And so that just naturally makes other boys curious about Star Wars. At some point later in life, our like curiosity kicks in and we're willing to try things that we don't have a previous context for. But when something is totally new to him, I think he's a little less interested than if it's something he knows, like if he knows the background of or has seen a previous movie or TV show, then he's more interested in. I'm just trying to think about stuff that he has gotten into like very recently. You know, I mean, I guess this goes back to Star Wars, but like he really knows the scores of the movies well. And so that's an interesting thing that I felt like he picked up on.
Let's go out with one of the Star Wars ones. What's a particularly monumental one?
Well, he really loves the Imperial March from Star Wars, which they introduced in Empire Strikes Back. And then that basically becomes the entrance music whenever, you know, Darth Vader comes into a room or the story is suddenly shifting and now it's like the bad guys part of the story. He really, like, he understands exactly what that music means, that when you hear that, that means, you know, here come the bad guys. It's meant to be a kind of intimidating, and he reacts to that. I think he likes the power of it and the fear that it is meant to instill in you. Yeah.
Your son is a rapscallion.
As long as he can, you know, knows to keep it at arm's length, I'm fine with that.
Hey, all Dave. Right.
Yes.
I really want to hang out, spin records, and watch Star Wars with Max. All right. Let's have a play date. Just set it up. All right.
Anytime. Anytime. As soon as social distancing is over, anytime he'd like to come by.
Awesome.
Literally every day of the quarantine, we get up in the morning, we watch a part of whatever Star Wars movie he's up to. We finish it off at night. We get up the next morning. We watch the next movie in the sequence. And it just, we don't have Rise of Skywalker, but we have all the other eight, and we just keep watching them like in an unending loop.
Respect. Thank you. Respect.
So let's go out. This is the Imperial March, Bad Boys for Life, Popcast theme music coming into your area. Big stomping, Dave Itzkoff. Appreciate you as always.
It was a pleasure, John. Thank you.
Coming out of the Imperial March, I want to bring that energy to talk about my childhood. I know we've been doing a JC Cribs for the last few weeks. I was looking around in the home office to see if there was anything that was specific to my childhood when it came to music. I have a t-shirt from my bar mitzvah giveaway t-shirts, and that got me thinking about what I was listening to in my early teenage years. But to be honest, that's like a little too sentient. It's a little too aware. By the time you're 12, turning 13, you're making all these proactive choices. You're not being fed music quite the same way you are as when you're a child. So I decided to start looking online at the 80s and year by year Billboard hits of the early to mid 80s, because I kind of wanted to identify some of the germs of what went on to become my taste profile. And I tried to pin down what I thought the year was where I first really got awakened to pop music. And the truth is, it's pretty early. 1981's Billboard year-end Hot 100. The number one song was Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes. I remember that very vividly. Number two was Endless Love, Lionel Richie and Diana Ross, which I also remember very vividly. There are some records on here I do not remember. I don't remember John Lennon's Just Like Starting Over. But I do remember Jesse's Girl, Rick Springfield, Dolly Parton, 9 to 5, Sheena Easton, Morning Train. That's sort of where it starts to come together. And then 1982, you have Olivia Newton-John, Eye of the Tiger, Centerfold, Don't You Want Me by the Human League. This is all like crystal clear in my mind. So here I am, 6 or 7 years old. Maybe I was watching Disney movies. Maybe I was watching children's films, television. I'm sure I was. None of that stuff stuck with me. This, which I heard on the radio when I was in the car with my mom or in the car with my dad, this is what stuck with me. And this is the germ of everything that came after. So as we go out today, I want to listen to a song. It's actually from 83 that is sort of an absurdly sentimental record to me, and which I think about probably a disproportionate amount to how popular it was, even though it was very popular at the time. But I've always been very moved by Quiet Storm R&B, sappy ballads, things that center emotion and that move at such a slow pace where you can't kind of elide the feelings. The feelings just step right up and step right on you. And I was going through the chart from 1983 and I found a song. It was not, strictly speaking, a Quiet Storm R&B song. It's adjacent to it. It was very moving to me as a child. I was probably 7 when this song came out. I used to sing along in the car. I have very clear memories of this, and I could probably still sing it word for word today, which I will spare you of. So before we go out, you can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Email us, podcast@nytimes.com, with any questions or get involved with the Facebook group, which continues to be popping. If you search for it on Facebook, or I posted a link to it on Twitter, get in the Facebook group, share us. If you're a parent, I want to know what your kids are into, because I've been fascinated over the course of the last few days to talk to parents and to understand how children's musical educations are formed. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. And that's Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Pandora, et cetera, et cetera. Our producer is Pedro Rosado from Head Stepper Media. And to take it back to my childhood, here's a little Never Gonna Let You Go. It's Sergio Mendez. Actually, I did not know the vocalists' names of this song, I'm embarrassed to say, until about 30 minutes ago. And it's Joe Pizzullo and Lisa Miller. But the song's credited to Sergio Mendez. It's Never Gonna Let You Go. Get a Kleenex. I'm never gonna let you go. I'm gonna